All right, Lady Ballers, this week I have fellow Lady Baller, Jennifer Lee here. So Jen's come along to a Lady Balls retreat before. She is a Lady Baller through and through, and I've been following her journey for how many years now?
Four, five, maybe, I'm not even sure.
More, for sure. You were one of the original boomers, I'm sure.
Yeah, I was at your second retreat.
And you were at my first, my San Diego event, which was 4 years ago.
4 years ago.
So it's been about maybe, I think, five or six years, something like that.
Yeah, long time.
Long time. So today, Jen's going to share with us her story of when she's embraced her Lady Balls, and she's got an amazing story. And obviously, having come along to a retreat, we've gone deep on her journey. So today she's going to share that with you guys. And so thanks for jumping on.
Thank you for having me. I'm super excited to be here, Jodie. Thank you so much.
So when I think of Lady Ballers, you're the first person that comes to my head because you're one of the OGs. So.
I'm honored.
Awesome to have you here. So, hey, let's get straight into it. What do you feel? You can either go timeline-wise or the biggest time in your life where you've embraced your Lady Balls.
Oh my goodness, where to start? So let's just do a quickish backstory. And it was about, 11 years ago that I had a weight loss surgery. And so up until this point of having the weight loss surgery, there was the Jennifer that was always like super bubbly and happy on the outside, but just like crying and so sad and depressed on the inside, just because I didn't have the self-worth or the self-esteem. But nobody knew that. I didn't portray that at all. So I took a look at my life and decided that I needed to make a huge change. And for me at that time, I felt having a weight loss surgery was the answer. The answer. I was like, yeah, this is going to like fix everything, right? Okay, so the weight loss surgery was a success. It's been 10 years, over 10 years now, and I have lost and kept off over 120 pounds. So if you take a look at that statistically, I'm in the 1%. Most people who have the weight loss surgery tend to gain the weight back. And the reason why they gain the weight back is because they never took care of the root cause of why they overate in the first place. So I was fortunate enough to fall into personal development. And well, I was always in personal development, but really I fell into spirituality. So we'll get to more on that in a moment. But because I want to back up just a little bit, because I couldn't overeat anymore, I did great for the first year and a half. And then along came vodka. So again, not dealing with my emotions and just stuffing them down, like, but I couldn't do it with food anymore. So I did it with vodka. Started off innocently enough. I don't like most alcoholic drinks. And so the drink of choice was a vanilla Stoli and Diet Coke. Honestly, it was like vanilla Coke, right? It just tasted so good. So I went down that path and started off innocently enough, but then it got to the point where happy hour was like the highlight of my day. I couldn't wait till like 5 o'clock when I could start having a drink, right? Or start drinking. So I did that for a few years, and I woke up one day and it was just like, Jen, you've got to stop this. There was too many blackout moments. Thank goodness I worked with incredible people that like took care of me, made sure that I got back to my hotel room every night, so that I was at least safe, right? But here's the thing. I am a grown, can we swear, ass woman.
It's my part. Sure you can.
I was a grown-ass woman, and it's not anybody's responsibility to take care of me, right? Not anybody else's responsibility. So I went to my first and only AA meeting, still drunk. I was here in Vegas, and I thought, I don't have that big of a problem. That's like, this isn't me, right? Still in denial mode. So I quit cold turkey. I was sober for about 2.5, maybe 3 months. And I thought, I could handle this. And this is the thing with alcoholics, is that most people think that they can handle it. So I went back and I tried it, and it was about 2 months in, and I wasn't drinking every day, which was like a huge accomplishment. But then it was just every so often until it wasn't. And it was just like a night of debauchery. I don't even remember everything that happened. But then, excuse me, I was in Elko, my hometown, and my sister and I had gone out that night. And she doesn't drink. So she was my designated driver, and I was drinking all the time, like the whole night. The next day was 4th of July, and I was too hungover that whole day that even by the time to go watch the fireworks with my family, with my two sisters and their kids, and my mom was there, and I was too hungover to go and hang out with them. So that was definitely a defining moment for me, and I haven't drank since. It just wasn't worth it. It wasn't worth it. And it was hard at first, because you're like, well, it would be nice to have a drink when you go out with friends or whatever. Then I almost hit that 90 days, and I was like, okay, well, the 90 days is more important to me than that drink. And then it just slowly shifted. To where now, today, I don't have any desire to drink. And it's been over 4 years, almost 4.5 years. I don't have any desire. But, so here's the other thing. A friend of mine also went sober, but he went through the AA meetings, and it worked great for him. He was talking to me, and he asked me how my sobriety was going. And I said, you know, it's going great and stuff. And he's like, and you don't go to meetings? I said, no. He's all, but you had a spiritual awakening, right? I said, yes. So it just depends. Like, everybody's journey is different. AA is definitely great for those that it serves. For me, it was more of my spirituality and just like, and waking up and seeing what I can't unsee anymore and taking a look at the bigger picture and figuring out life lessons that I'm meant to learn in this lifetime here.
Got it. So I have a question for you, because I've heard you say this story a few times now, obviously, in all the things that we've done together.
Yeah.
This is the first time I've heard you say it, and you almost sound emotional saying it. So now, because the amount of times you've told the story now that it's part of what you do in this world, help people, what does it feel like now when you tell that story?
So there was several times that I've told the story that there was no emotion whatsoever. And at that time I thought, well, good. I've cleared it all up. If there's like no emotion there, then
and I've seen that straight up in person, and I've gone, wow, she's really shifted that.
Yeah. I understand your question, and I'm not sure. I just know that my whole body is like tingling right now. So it's just like, things are just like moving through me, and I'm just speaking. I don't have a great answer for that right now. But it is definitely, I'm sure something will come to me as I keep talking.
So when we first spoke, first time we met in person was at my San Diego event.
Yes.
So that was about 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. At that event, you would have been, I think you were only about a year sober then, maybe a year and a half. And we spoke about you doing something in this world to help people who had been through what you had been through. And you said that you weren't ready at the time. And I remember pushing you, and remember when you came along to the event, you would next came to a Lady Balls event, and I said to you, come along to the event, but make this your launch. Because you were drawn to do it to help people who had been through addictions with food or alcohol or anything else, really. And you, and everyone else's eyes were so ready, but you weren't quite ready yet. So when you came to the Lady Balls event, you were going to launch it. And when we went through some deep stuff there, so we had an amazing lady come along and do a rebirthing, which was very intense. And she actually chose Jen to lead some of that. And when there was some sort of role playing going on, she got Jen to step up to be the key person, the strong person in the role play, because she saw that energy in you and she knew that what you were capable of. And you kind of launched after that, but you're always opening up. And I feel like you're, because we're constantly growing, you're becoming more and more and more open to that. And given that the topic here is strapping on your lady balls, you've recently really launched. Like, you've launched it before, but I feel like you're now really, really launching it. Talk me through that process from where you were that day in San Diego to now. Because this is strapping on your lady balls.
Yes. Yes, it is. So in San Diego, I had this huge vision of how I wanted to help and serve others, just because I feel like I am not the only one out there that has gone through this, that has an addiction to food or alcohol, or using those as vices instead of dealing with the emotions and the root cause, like the deeper inner work. And doing that deeper inner work, it's scary. Oh my gosh. That's why a lot of people don't do it. But there comes a point in life where you have to, because it's always on your mind. You're always thinking about it. And it's like, okay, I will do it. Let's sit down and work through whatever your situation is that you need to work through. So from San Diego to the Lady Balls event, this is me. I always felt like I was always getting ready. Still to this day, I feel like I'm still getting ready. But I had to bite the bullet. I had to do it. Ready or not, here I come. Beginning of this year, I set a date. I was like, all right, I'm going to launch on this date. And I did, I launched on that date, but I set it out like 8 months in advance. I'm like, oh, I got 8 months to deal with it, right? So, but then it gets closer and closer and closer, and it's like, oh, you just got to do it. So here's the thing, it gets closer to time, and then your ego starts to come in, and there's the imposter syndrome, and who are you to do this, and why would anybody listen to you? Oh my gosh, I fought that hard, like, hardcore. I can't even say that I fought it, because I still fight it. I don't think it's going to go away anytime soon. And I say that because I've talked to many other people who are ahead of me, in, you know, the online business world, and they still go through it. They make hundreds of thousands of dollars a month and they still go through it. It's just how you deal with it, right? You know that it's going to come up and you're going to talk to it real quick and then you're going to dismiss it. And you do the thing anyway. So launching now, I did launch. But even I had to launch because I told myself I was going to do it, and I did it, and I went through the motions. I promoted it a little bit here and there. I definitely could have promoted it better. But I felt like I just had to do it. And I did. This first launch flopped. Gonna be honest, totally flopped. Nobody bought anything. And I know it was because of my energy behind it all. I was scared. I'm still scared. But when I talk about it, I get so fired up, and I just need to remember that and to tap into that power instead of letting ego and the imposter syndrome and everything else come and take over.
Do you remember at the Lady Bulls retreat, we actually wrote all over those balloons as we released it at the end, and we said consistency is cash as well.
Yes.
And for myself, like, some people love to jump on lives, some people like to batch their videos, that kind of thing. But we all know no matter what our vehicle for getting our message out there is, it's about the consistency. So if someone does a launch that starts off with a webinar and it's an open close launch, that's one step in a journey. It's just one step. If somebody does a webinar and it goes, you know, they fall flat on their face, it's just one step of the journey. There's like 1,000 steps to take. And it's not about take one, oh God, it failed, I'm a loser, I suck, imposter syndrome, all of that shit comes up. It's like, cool, what's the next step? What's the next step? What's the next step? Because like that example, I love that example that Esther Hicks or Abraham uses. And it's like, you know, when you go to the gas station and you know your car's out of gas, you go to the gas station, you fill it up because you know it needs filling up. You don't sit there going, oh my God, the gas tank's empty, what a loser. You just go, oh, I need gas. You go and get gas. There's no emotion attached to it. And when you talk about launching or doing anything in your business, it's like, what's the next step? Think of it as, I've got to get gas in the tank. What's the next step? I've got to get gas in the tank. There's no emotion attached to it. But the emotion is good because it will derail us, make sure we're on the right track. It'll bring up our shit. And every step that we take gives us that practice to, like you say, hear that thought come in, just appreciate it for what it is, and then go, fuck off, your thought, that thought is not going to stop me today, and you keep moving forward anyway. And the consistency that we talked about, it's like, if someone does a webinar or some sort of launch and it feels like it's failed, the only thing that you can do that would be failure is to not get up the next day and do the next thing. And that's where the consistency comes in. And when you have those moments of passionate rant and fire in you come out of you, that's when you just grab your fucking phone and you rant and you let that shit out and you fucking post it everywhere. That's the shit that will hook the people. It might not be a planned webinar where you are, I've got my 45 slides because this person told me this is the perfect webinar.
Totally.
Those fucking rant videos that come from your soul that will bring the people in.
Yes. 100 million times, yes.
In fact, I'm supposed to do a webinar at the moment and I'm avoiding it because I know that my fuck this rant videos will do far better than any webinar will.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's when, because I've taken a crap ton of courses and you do like XYZ and you follow all of this. And so I learned all of that, but I'm like, not really feeling it, right? Like, I want to do this, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do it when I feel inspired. Okay, well, even if I don't feel inspired and it's on my calendar, I'm still going to like bring it out and like get into the zone and deliver anyway. But it's like, you just gotta like do your own thing. Like, as Carly says, play your own game, right? You just gotta like,
and then some days you don't feel like it, which is why I like to batch, because there's a lot of days I don't feel like it. So if I plan a day and go, right, today you're filming and you're going to record 10 videos, and I stand there and I go into that day and I completely switch my energy into a fucking fire from my soul energy and spit them out on camera, then I know that I've got backup passionate rant videos for those days that I don't feel it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And absolutely. I know that you've sat there and smashed out a shit ton of videos by batching over a few days. Yes. But yeah, like those fire in your soul days, they're the ones that are really going to.
Those are the ones that you just, that are gold. And you're like, okay, how many videos can I get done today? 20? Can we do 20?
Yeah, exactly. And having somebody there and shifting your energy. And like I said to you the other day, I looked at your profile and I'm like, man, she's done so many certifications and qualifications about everything and personal development and spirituality and all of the stuff that you're there to teach. But that day at the Lady Bulls retreat, you know, as Yvonne said to you on the day, like, you're just born to fucking do this. You are a vessel for this message that you have to share. You've gone through this contrast and adversity to be able to share it. And no certificate and course and certification in the world is going to do anything as well as that fire inside you.
I completely agree. But I know me and I feel like I have to have the outside validation first, like that certification. Be like, see, look, I do know what I'm talking about. So that's something that I am personally working on. And I know that I'm not the only one that's out there that feels this way. But yeah, and it's just like, you know, I know that I'm qualified to talk about this stuff because I lived it firsthand. Like, there's nobody that knows it better than me for these specific things that I went through.
But I think every single person that's been on the Lady Balls podcast has talked about that imposter syndrome because we all get it. I get it all the time. But you get so used to having it that you're like, oh, fuck this one again. Like, who am I to teach this shit? Oh, seriously. It's like, we've been going on about this shit forever. But it won't go away. It's just like you say, it's just how you manage it. And as you said before, doesn't matter what level you're at. And I always come back to that Cameron Herold sitting next to me at that speaker's table at that event all those years ago. And he coaches billionaires. And I had the speed wobbles and he said to me, there are billionaires that I coach that wake up in the morning and don't get out of bed because they're scared 16-year-old boys going, how the fuck did I get here? Who the fuck am I to run this company with 3,000 staff? So it doesn't matter what level we're at, that shit's always going to come. So it's almost like flipping those words. Like we all feel like, I'm not ready. Am I ready? I'm not ready yet. I've just got to do this. I've just got to do that. We're never going to be fucking ready. It's like when people go, are you ready to have a baby? No, but it's coming. You know, it's like, yeah, no, nice fucking ready for that shit.
Oh, yes, indeed.
That's good fun. So over the years, what's your favorite moment of embracing your lady balls? What's been the biggest, I mean, because I know you've had a lot, but what's your biggest breakthrough moment? Where you've gone, fuck yeah, and you felt so inspired. And you just know that this is your calling.
Oh gosh, so many to choose from. It's when I wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning and you just can't sleep. Because you're so excited to just get out there and share your message. And you're like, but I need sleep right now so that I can like function properly in a few hours, right? So you think that. It's also when somebody thanks me for my email message or the post that I did, a video. It's when you actually get, when you know that your work is helping somebody else. Because a lot of the time I will post stuff and it's crickets, nothing. Like a few likes here or there. And I'm like, this is epic shit. Why isn't everybody liking it and sharing it? This is such good stuff, right? So it's the moments where you know that your work is actually helping somebody because they tell you that it is. And so it gives you that little boost to carry on. I mean, I'm gonna carry on regardless, but you carry on. But yeah, it's just when you wake up and you're just so excited to get going with your day and share your message and just to help other people to so that, because there were so many times where I felt so lonely and just like there was just little to no hope that I don't want anybody to ever feel like that.
I've always wanted to, and I tell people to do it all the time, but I haven't done it myself, is when someone sends you one of those messages of how you've helped them, to print it off and start collecting them like a wall that is just all messages from people that you've helped. So if you ever have any kind of gray time, you can just go to that wall and just completely be lifted.
Absolutely.
That would be cool.
I screenshot them so that I keep them.
Yeah.
And just, yeah.
I love it. So what's another time in your life where you've felt you've really embraced your lady balls?
Oh gosh, well, I stand up for myself more these days. What I will and will not tolerate. So that's been exciting. setting new boundaries. And a lot of it is because I now have the confidence to do it. Whereas before you would just kind of like go with the flow or like, you know, whatever. Yeah, not anymore. Like I have some clear boundaries and if you cross them, I'm going to let you know. Mm-hmm. So that's been huge for me because I haven't had that all my whole life. Let's see, another time. Gosh. So when you just know that what you are doing is what you're supposed to be doing in this world, you have that, everything just like feels so good. You have like the tinglies all over your body and everything is just like super in flow. And you follow it. It's magical.
So if someone comes and, because we haven't talked about this in probably over a year now, when somebody comes to work with you, maybe they're dealing with food addictions, alcohol, some other kind of addiction, and they come to you, what's the first step that you take with them?
I get to know them. I want to know about their story. When they first started feeling this way, I want to make sure to take a look at the bigger picture. I want to know about the key people in their lives, their job, if they love it, hate it, where they live, like all of the aspects. Because it's really how you're able to help somebody is when you take a look at the bigger picture. It's not just that one person and they have this one problem. There's a reason why they have this problem. And it could be anything. It could be because of, you know, the relationship that they're in, or they're underappreciated at work and they just hate it, or the list is long. But getting to know that person, and we might spend an hour just listening to them, just them telling me everything about their life.
Because the food and the alcohol is just a byproduct of what really is going on.
Absolutely.
Got it. I like it. And so in what context do you work with them? Do you do one-on-one? How you've got a program? Why don't you tell us how you work with people?
Yes, thank you. So I do have one-on-one positions available. You can find them on my website, jenniferroselee.com, and then coaching. If you would like to take a look at that, or I do have some digital courses. Heal Your Relationship with Food is my most recent one. And you can just, again, go to my website, jenniferroselee.com, and click on courses and take a look at the sales page and see if it resonates with you.
So can you tell us a little bit more about that course? Because this is a new one. This is the one that I don't know as much about.
Yes. So this course is everything that I wish I would have known before I had the weight loss surgery 11 years ago. So in Heal Your Relationship with Food, we take a look at the bigger picture. It's not even until module 4 when we actually start talking about the food that you're eating, because it's not about food. It's beyond so much more than that. So we take a look at your history. What happened if there was like a certain year that you started gaining weight? What happened in that year? We take a look at certain events throughout your lifetime to see if you're holding on to any trauma from any of those times. We take a look at, like I mentioned before, like your whole environment, everything from where you live, if you're truly happy, if you love your job, like all of those things. So we talk, after we get that foundation done, we then talk about like stressed eating versus relaxed eating. So this is a huge one. Like this is like in, you know, when I learned about this, I was like, well, of course. So for example, when you are stressed eating, so there's the fight or flight response. We've all heard this. So back in the day when we would have to like run for our lives because a tiger is chasing us, right? Your body goes into stress mode and everything shuts down, like all of the your digestive system, everything that isn't important to save your life right at that time for you to run as fast as you possibly can to save your life gets shut down. So your digestive system is one of the first ones. So when you eat in a stressed state, you are already giving your body a disadvantage of properly digesting your food. So if you eat at a relaxed state, completely opposite. So if we think about like the Europeans and the French, you know, they take like 2 hours for lunch and they have white linen tablecloths and everything is like super fun and chill and relaxed, right? That's a great way to just totally open up your digestive system so it can work at its optimal state. Now, yes, we don't all have 2 hours to have lunch. So do what you can with that information. You know, make sure that you always sit down to eat. Don't eat in your car or on the run or, you know, while you're walking, whatever. Just make sure that you take the time. It could be 10 minutes. It could be 15 minutes. It doesn't have to be the whole hour for lunch because most of us can't eat that much food in a sitting anyway. But do what you can to make sure that you sit in a relaxed state so that you can make sure that your digestion has the best opportunity to fully function for you. And that's what we cover in like module one. And then if you're a fast eater, if you're a slow eater, so if you experience, let's say heartburn or indigestion, I want to know how fast do you eat? Do you eat like just like super fast and you're just like inhaling it? Chances are you're going to get heartburn. If you eat at slow, like I'm not going to tell you to chew your food like 20 times before you swallow because that's just ridiculous. But make sure that you're just mindful and present in the moment. Like really taste your food, the texture, if it's hot or cold, the spices. Just be in the moment and enjoy your food. So another thing that I think is just like absolutely fascinating is that how can I be hungry when I just ate an hour ago? So here's the connection between those two. Your brain and your stomach both have to register that you're eating. So if you eat super fast, like how many times have you had like, I don't know, let's say like a coffee, a cappuccino or a nice, whatever it is. And you're like, it's gone already. Like how is like, you know, I just started drinking it and it's gone already. Well, we consumed that product without really thinking about it. And so our mind doesn't register that we had it at all. And it's like, I still want it. Same thing with our meals. If we eat our meals super fast or highly distracted, our brain isn't going to register that it actually ate and it's going to think that it's hungry, even though you just ate an hour ago or you had Chinese food. I'm just kidding.
I get it. That's why I don't eat at my desk anymore. Plus, I don't want to associate work with eating.
Yeah.
Like, no, sometimes if Owen's around, he'll go, do you want me to bring you lunch at your desk? And I'll go, no, I'll come down and eat it.
Yeah.
Otherwise I'll just be sitting here scoffing it while I'm eating and then I'll feel it. Then it brings a scarcity mode up because I'll think, oh my God, all the food's gone. I don't even remember, you know, enjoying it. And you just feel completely ripped off and it puts you in scarcity mode.
Yes.
Which then rubs off onto everything that you're doing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So those are just a few of the things that we talk about. There's a whole list of things. And it's incredible because we actually talk about like how do foods actually make you feel after you eat them? And we track that. So like if I eat a sandwich, oh my gosh, I'm going to need a nap like 20 minutes later because it just makes me really sleepy. Some people love sandwiches and can eat them and totally process them correctly.
Yeah.
For me, it makes me sleepy. So we just take notice of what it is, how the foods that you eat work with your body. Like there's no meal plan. There's no restrictions. I'm not going to tell you not to eat this or that. Like there's none of that. None. That's
what it really is about your relationship with food, how your body works. So it's not even about the food, it's about how you eat.
It is. It's about how you eat. We get deeply spiritual in this, to where we talk about ancestral baggage and past lives, soul contracts, life lessons, like all of that kind of stuff. That's why it's like, it's so different than anything that I know of that's out there. Because it gets to like the root cause of why, because I always wanted to know why I ate how I ate. Like, why do I feel like I have to like always be like always have food with me, or like the whole scarcity, like where is that coming from? Like, why am I feeling all of that?
Mm-hmm. So the kids in Africa are starving and you're not eating that meal, all that stuff.
Yes.
And you can swap out food for alcohol, drugs, yes, sex, yes, any kind of addiction, and it's all the same.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay, cool. And if they want to find out where to get that program or more about it, maybe watch some of your videos, they go to
jenniferroselee.com.
Brilliant. All right. Well, this has flown by.
I know.
Very quickly.
Totally.
That's what I love about these podcasts. I was thinking this morning when I knew I was talking to you first, I was like, man, I should just line up podcasts back to back. It's so fun just talking to my friends and recording.
It has been so great. It's been so great.
Well, thank you so much for jumping on, and I'm excited to get this one out. And I know all the other Lady Ballers, because you're the OG, they all know that they'll be excited to listen to this. So
thank you so much. It was my honor to be here. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Jen.